I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Mr. Tim Dennis. And folks, before you send me any more angry emails or private messages on social media, before you call out for the burning torches and pitchforks, Tim has been very busy, so he hasn't set up that Cameo page yet to do private messages for you. But he will. He's assured me that he's going to get on it today, right, Tim?
Yeah, I will get on it today, yes. Yeah.
There you go. So if you want to book a Cameo with me, I'm on Cameo. I'll put a link up on today's program guide again. Tim will have a Cameo up probably by the time this episode is actually airing on Thursday, so you can go get a private birthday message, an anniversary message, a hey, what a great job you've done in life message, congratulations on that new job, hey, congratulations on leaving that last shitty job, hey, congratulations on your marriage, congratulations on your divorce, whatever kind of message you want from either one of us, we're on Cameo, we'll deliver it for you. As a matter of fact, Tim would be happy to break up with people for you. Or he'd even be happy to tell people, hey, I'm pregnant with your baby. So if you want Tim Dennis to deliver those messages, he'll be on Cameo.
But I can't get pregnant with anybody's baby, Dave. That's not how my plumbing works.
Not with that attitude, mister. Oh. Not with that attitude.
Right.
Listen, crazy stuff going on with that. So Cameo, again, if you're not familiar, it's where you can go and actually hear from real celebrities and guys like Tim and I who will wish you all of these great things and do little videos for you. So go check out cameo.com. You can look up Dave Schrader. And now you could look up Tim Dennis. I also wanted to make a quick mention. Holidays are right around the corner, folks. I've got my package, and it is... I've firmed up my package, Tim. That's what I'm going to say here. I've firmed it up for people.
Are you lifting now, weights with it?
Yeah, yeah. Now they get the autograph Holzer Files card. They get the autographed book, The Other Side, A Teen's Guide to Ghost Hunting and the Paranormal. But Dave, I'm not a teen. I'm an adult, but that's okay. It was written for everybody. The publisher, in all of their grand wisdom, decided to slap teen on the cover because Twilight was a big rage back then, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, sparkling vampires equals ghost hunting, apparently. Sure. So you get my autograph book, you get my autograph card, and you get a Darkness Radio decal. How about that? That seems like a pretty good deal. It is like a anywhere between $50 to $2,000 value, depending on how much you care about me. But you get it for what I think it's like $40 plus shipping and handling. So if you're interested, just email me. I want to get Dave's package. And I will have the lovely Winnie send you the information and bill you on it. Now, none of us will be available. I am already on the cruise, and I will not be back until the 25th. So we'll get your emails. We'll process orders on the 26th, and things will be back to normal by then. But I'm just throwing that out there, letting you know. So if you want to get your hands on my package, and let's face it, who doesn't? Just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. And I will make sure that we get you taken care of so that you can get the perfect gift for yourself or your loved ones for the holidays. Tim, right now, even though I'm still in this undisclosed location recording this episode, when people are listening to this episode, I will be floating in the Bermuda Triangle, one of the most chilling places on planet Earth, and in one of the most terrifying geometric patterns, Tim. You never want to float into a triangle no matter where you are in the world. I've realized that. You never hear anybody talk about the disappearances in the hexagon of Lexington or the paragon of Pawtucket. Huh? You like that?
The paragon of Pawtucket?
I don't know. Is paragon a shape? I think it sounds like a shape. Probably means something different.
Close enough, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the rectangle of Rhode Island. You just never hear those, right?
Right.
But you hear about triangles all the time. And there's a new book, Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. Much like its counterpart, the Bermuda Triangle, it's one of the most enigmatic places on Earth. And since 1988, coinciding with the birth of my first son, Tim, over 16,000 people have mysteriously gone missing across its landscape. And over the years, this region has played host to some of the strangest phenomena ever recorded. What causes this unexplained activity? And what ancient mysteries are hidden in the last frontier? Well, some of those questions are answered for you quite eloquently. Mike Ricksecker is the author of that book. And I don't know, Mike, I guess I just said that out loud, and saying your name that way made it sound very angry. Mike Ricksecker, but you just have that kind of name that when you give it a little oomph, it sounds more agitated than triumphant. So I apologize for that.
No, not a problem, Dave. That's the name is actually Swiss, but it's the German side of Switzerland. So you get that, type of sound in there.
Mike Ricksecker. He's the author of the Amazon bestselling A Walk in the Shadows, which we had him on our show for, which is a complete guide to shadow people, 8 historic paranormal books, and the esoteric tome Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. He's appeared on multiple television shows and programs as a paranormal historian, including Travel Channel's The Alaska Triangle, Discovery Plus's Fright Club, and more. Mike also produces his own internet supernatural-based shows on the Haunted Road Media YouTube channel and is the producer and director of the docuseries The Shadow Dimension, available on several streaming platforms. On Tuesday and Wednesday nights, he hosts The Edge of the Rabbit Hole live stream show and the Connecting the Universe interactive class, respectively. Haunted Road Media is also his own paranormal and supernatural book publishing and video production company, representing a number of paranormal authors, winning the award for excellent media in the paranormal field at the 2019 Shockfest Film Festival. And somehow, Tim, by hook or by crook, we've got him on our show today. Mike, it's always good to catch up with you, man. Thanks for being here.
Oh, absolutely. Always great to talk to you and Tim. And Dave, I got to say, I learned a lot more about your package today than I was expecting.
Well, you got to see my package firsthand when we were out, what was it, at Gettysburg?
That was in Michigan.
Michigan Paracon, yeah. Right. You couldn't keep your eyes off my package. I noticed that, but I was also...
Yeah, you were right across the table from me, yeah.
I was also noticing you've got a pretty impressive package yourself. You've got how many books now total?
Alaska's Mysterious Triangle is my 12th.
12 books, Tim. And they say size doesn't matter, but I've only got one. He's got 12. I think it might matter.
I think it matters.
A foot long right there.
Yeah. He's outdone you by 11. I can do the math. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's all right. I appreciate a guy like Mike who's willing to do all the hard work and then come on the show and let me just ask questions while he shares his hard work with us. We do have a link for the book in today's program guide and on our website. You can go check out darknessradio.com. Click on the store tab. It'll take you into our Amazon storefront, and there is paranormal books, true crime books, paranormal gifts and swag. But in the paranormal section, you'll find all of the books that we cover on the program. What is it about triangles? Do you think that truly has some kind of geometric principle to why these strange disappearances happen? Or what do you make of it, Mike?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I mean, the whole idea of the triangle really, of course, began with the Bermuda Triangle in the 1940s, and it got that nomenclature. And really, it's kind of, three prominent positions in the area that are kind of cherry picked because it's not a perfect triangle. It's not like you step outside the bounds of this imaginary triangle and all of a sudden all the activity stops. It's really
triangle shaming Bermuda now. Is that what I just heard?
there's legit stuff
spilling
that happens
out over the side. Uh huh.
But yeah, it's not like you get that strict cutoff when you cross the line. It's cool nomenclature. It's a very cool name. So ever since the Bermuda Triangle, we've attributed this to other mysterious areas of the world, like the Dragon Triangle there in Japan, Bridgewater Triangle in Massachusetts. You've got the Lake Michigan Triangle. So all these different areas that you find three spots on the map that kind of encompass the area, and you're like, okay, this is the triangle, but really it extends out from those boundaries that we've put on these areas.
But there is this basic element. Now here's something to consider, Mike. Listen to me on this. Okay, let's take a puff pass and follow down the rabbit hole together. So it starts. Do we look at where the majority of these strange disappearances and occurrences begin? Do they begin in the triangle and then slowly, as time progresses, start to spill out as though, you know, maybe whatever strange phenomena was there is getting bigger?
Yeah, I think there's almost like a ground zero to these sorts of things. Like, you know, there's a centralized location where this activity happens and it extends outward from there. Now, does it keep resonating further and further from that point? I think you'd almost kind of have to you'd really have to study each individual little incident that's happened, map them out, put them on some sort of, you know, timeline, say, okay, these happened in the 40s, these happened in the 50s, this happened 100 years ago, whatever, to figure that out. And there's so many of these incidents that happen. Like you said before the show, you threw the statistic out there, you know, 16,000 people have gone missing since 1988 in Alaska. Now, not all of those, of course, are attributed to the strange phenomena of the triangle. Some of those are just legit disappearances. It happens.
Some of them just people that are like, oh, screw Alaska, it's too cold. And then they moved to Miami and just didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, and then they're out of there. Right. Sure, that happens. Some people just want to get away. Some people go to Alaska just to get away. And suddenly they go missing in the woods and are found, you know, decades later. But there are so many strange disappearances that happen in Alaska. Like just for instance, it was back in 2012. There was a race there, a marathon called it's the Mount Marathon race, and it's near Seward, Alaska. And one of the runners going up the mountain along with everybody else never comes back down. Where did he go? And they're out there searching endlessly for where he may. Did he fall off the trail somewhere? He was just gone, and they've never found him to this day. That was 9 years ago.
Good God. Do they, you'd think for marathons, then if you're going to be running in potentially dangerous and weird areas, maybe GPS these runners. So, A, you can keep track on them, make sure they're not hopping in a cab to take, you know, part of it as a ride and then getting off just at the end.
They've put measures into place since that incident. It's unfortunate it took that incident, you know, to put some of those things into place. You have people monitoring the paths all the time and things like that now. But, you know, just for something bizarre like that to happen, you'd think at least at some point, you know, if he, you know, fell, you know, broke a leg, broke his neck, whatever, that his body would eventually be found, but never was.
Where did he go? Yeah. Now in this triangle, right, are we talking vast wilderness? Are we talking a lot of communities, you know, because if we're looking at an area that's, you know, hard to traverse, it's the surprise of the disappearance wouldn't be as great. But if it's, you know, kind of covering a wide expanse of both, you know, settled life and wild terrain as a mixture, that would be a little bit more unsettling.
Yeah, there's a mix for sure. Now, we are talking Alaska, so it's a very generally a very sparse landscape. But, you know, you have these very compact communities. I mean, Anchorage is a large city, And that is part of the triangle. That's supposed to be one of the corners of the triangle. You have Fairbanks that's in the middle of this thing. Juneau, that's a part of it. And then some of the other smaller communities are, you know, they're pretty tight knit. You know, everybody knows everybody. And so when somebody goes missing, you know, it's a really big deal. Now you get out there in the wilderness, you hear about like some of these UFO sightings around Mount Hayes, which, you know, may also have an underground base and things like that. There's no way to really get there without taking a plane. So there are some, you know, very vast areas of Alaska that, you know, just they're not populated at all.
Well, in these areas, like when we talk about the Bermuda Triangle, there are a lot of interesting, I guess, kind of natural phenomena that could take place, right? You're over large bodies of water where storms blow up. You've got gas vent releases at the bottom of the ocean that could possibly overturn ships and knock planes out of the sky to help them suddenly vanish. So, I mean, there's a lot to those different elements, right? Are there different aspects of this area in Alaska where the triangle lies? Are there fault lines? Are there things that may lend a natural experience that would look almost supernatural in appearance if, you know, a fault line moves or shifts? Does it release natural gases that could cause, you know, hallucinations or anything along those lines?
You know, Dave, I'm going to throw out a quote from your buddy Hans Holzer here. And I use this at the beginning of a lot of my presentations where he said back in the day that, you know, there is no supernatural. Everything that we think is supernatural is actually natural. It's a natural occurrence. So a lot of these supernatural occurrences, do they have some sort of natural backing to them? Absolutely. Now, Alaska is a very volatile area. You do have fault lines. I mean, largest earthquake in North America was recorded there, 1964. It was a 9.2, absolutely devastated Anchorage, Alaska, and the surrounding area. It was massive. You just had a 8-pointer there this past summer, which spawned off volcanoes going off in the Aleutian Islands. So, yeah, you have these earthquakes up there. You have the volcanoes. I mean, when I stepped off the plane, I was stationed up there for 3 years in the Air Force, 1992, 1995. And when I stepped off the airplane, it was November 1st, 1992, and there was snow falling from the sky, but there was also ash mixed in there as well because there had been a recent volcano eruption across the Cook Inlet. It was Mount Spur. And those first several weeks that I was up there, we were, you know, still covering up computer equipment from the fallout from that volcanic eruption. They recently discovered up there an ancient caldera, a massive super volcano from long, long ago that these smaller volcanoes these days are basically feeding from. So, yeah, you have all this natural environmental activity that's going on. You have the aurora borealis, which is basically, you know, protons and electrons from the solar flares from the sun that are, you know, beating off the ionosphere up there, and the magnetic protection is thinner in that area of the world. So you get that mixing with the volatility of the land, and it's ripe for all of the supernatural activity to occur, because the, you know, when we think of the supernatural, we always talk about how, you know, it's feeding on energy. Well, it's a natural energy that's actually feeding it from the land, from the sky with these solar flares. And so it's that's why we end up with so much of this crazy activity up there.
Now, do we also see, like in places like the Bridgewater Triangle, right? There's a lot of strange phenomena, from ghosts to UFOs to cryptids, mysterious lights, things like that. What fits into the Alaskan Triangle that might also be quite unusual and aside from just natural phenomena of what could be happening?
All of the above. So you do have a lot of hauntings up there, of course. We in the Alaska Command Building, when I was stationed up there, we saw all kinds of shadow activity in that basement. They attributed it to the building being a hospital back in the day, but it never was. They created this lore around it and trying to say that we were actually in the morgue area, which caused us, of course, to question once we discovered, okay, this never was a hospital. What's going on? But you had a lot of old mining towns. There was, you have old copper mines up there. You had the Klondike Gold Rush, which in Canada, but still part of the Triangle area. And you had a lot of people that would actually travel up the coast into Alaska and then traverse the terrain into Canada, into the Klondike area to do that gold mining. And so you had basically, there's a period of time in Alaska where it was like, the old Wild West, just further up north. So, you had these, old saloons and bordellos, and which is, ripe for all of these, different hauntings that we think of. Of course, you have the different cryptid sightings, the Hairy Man, the Bushman. There's Sasquatch and Yeti that are seen up there. The Lake Iliamna monster, which is basically like the Loch Ness monster of Alaska. I know I'm getting into a lot here.
No, but you talk about all these other, like the Hairy Man, the Wild Man. Are these all just this, varying names for the same creature, or are they different iterations, different types of creatures that are seen?
And they seem to be different species. Like the Bushman seems to be more of like being a descendant of giants. You have a lot of stories up there from the Native Alaskans in their ancient culture about giant humanoid beings that used to be in the area. Where with Hairy Man, he seems to be more of a classic Sasquatch type of character. And so it was extremely fascinating for me to do some of this research into the old giant lore and, questioning, okay, did the Denisovans from Asia, when you had that Bering land bridge, did they traverse the terrain to come across and settle there in Alaska and, mix with some of the indigenous folk? And then you have some of these other ancient legends from further south in North America, like with the origins of the Aztecs. It's some of those giants actually move northward. And when we start to question, okay, what would have attracted them? There's this fascinating story about the possibility of a black pyramid being buried in Alaska. Was there something with the energy from that was attracting some of these entities? We think back to other ancient sites around the world where you had these pyramidal structures that attracted people, that people were trying to harness that energy of the land into the pyramid. And you hear about the theories of making these pyramids into power plants. Is that what attracted these things there? And so these are questions that we explore in the book.
Now, the concept of giants, or what are we talking? A lot of people think giants like Jack and the Beanstalk, these monstrous beings. But are we talking just 7 foot tall humanoids, that we even have around us today, but are few and far between?
Yeah, a lot of times you're right. When people think of giants, are thinking, Jack of the Beanstalk type of things, or even like 15 to 20 footers. But really, you're talking, anywhere over 7 feet would be considered a giant. And most of these sightings seem to be within the 7 to 10 foot range. But if you're talking about something that is 10 feet tall, that is still massive. Even if it's not these, 20, 25 feet tall beings, 10 feet is still quite massive.
Yeah. Yeah, 10 feet's pretty historic. Have they found any kind of remains or anything there to help substantiate these claims?
That always becomes the challenge with these stories. So you can't touch the remains these days. They're protected. But long ago, you can find newspaper accounts of these findings all over the place. 100, 120 years ago of them finding these, you know, different giant remains, and the Smithsonian carted them off. And then they suddenly disappeared. Where did they go? And the Smithsonian won't talk about it. So you have these stories that people talk about. You have the, you know, the newspaper accounts. The challenge is finding the actual remains, and you can't touch them now. You cannot dig up these graves anymore. So that becomes the challenge in this research, is because we know that, sure, some of those stories were hoaxed. The challenge becomes in figuring out which ones were actually hoaxed and which ones are actually true.
Do you think that there's obviously there's respect for the dead that plays into, you know, not disturbing these graves, but do you believe that there's also kind of a complicity to hiding the truth about these giants or about these beings that once walked that area?
Oh, I do believe that there is something to be said for trying to hide the truth, because it would completely reshape our ancient history. I'm on board with the idea that there are lost civilizations, that there had been an advanced civilization, or even several advanced civilizations before us, that have been lost to time, that rose and fell. And when I go down this route and start talking about this, I want people to kind of understand that I'm not talking about, you know, an advanced civilization that had, you know, computers and cell phones and things like that, because we have not found those types of artifacts. But we have found some out-of-place artifacts that don't make sense for the time that we would be able to date them. So we can deduce that, yes, there were these different lost civilizations before us, and just the fact that, you know, you look at the pyramids, or you look at like Baalbek out in the Middle East, you know, that have these massive, massive stones that we cannot today be able to move them with our current technology. Somebody had to know how to be able to do that. So advanced civilizations that had other knowledge than we currently have today, where we have different knowledge ourselves than they had, we just, you know, when that civilization fell, you can date it back to, you know, the flood myth. It seems like every culture has a flood myth. So, you know, when you start seeing that consistent through, you know, ancient legend and lore within these different cultures, it's like, okay, so that actually happened. And you can see it in the geological record as well, that there was a cataclysm that happened around that time. And so you can see a rise of civilization back from that period of time. And prior to that, okay, what was the truth? What actually existed? Mm-hmm. If you remember, you know, there was all that controversy with Robert Schock and John Anthony West in the early 1990s when they said, you know, the Sphinx is older than what people are telling us. And one of the arguments consistently was, well, you know, there was no other civilization around that time. There's no other people, you know, building these type of structures. And then all of a sudden, recently here over the past 10 years, you have all this information about Göbekli Tepe coming out, which dates it around the time of what they're saying the Sphinx was. So yeah, there's a lot more going on in our ancient past than the mainstream is willing to tell us.
Well, let me ask you, I've thrown this to a lot of the guests that have come on, and we've discussed the fact that, yeah, I think, you know, there's complicity to hide some of this past. To what end? As we're an evolving species, we're someone that wants to know the truth, we're seeking the truth. What is the harm in accepting that we've uncovered something new about our history? Why do you think that they would hide that? What would be your rationale for us not knowing the truth behind, you know, giants and other aspects?
Yeah, part of it is, you know, sadly, part of it is going to be, you know, money and of course, pride. You know, you have somebody that's been teaching, you know, one philosophy for the last 40 years, and all of a sudden some other information comes out. Maybe they've written a couple of books on the subject, and they're supposed to be the expert in that subject matter, you know, SME, subject matter expert. And all of a sudden here comes this new information out and totally blows away everything that they've been doing for the past 40 years. That's their legacy. It's suddenly destroyed. So you have a lot of that sort of thing going on. You know, professors don't want to rewrite curriculum.
So it really comes down to just ego, keeping
there's it. That's part of it.
Wow.
That's part of it. There's also a part of, And you can say it's a faith-based thing. If you start recognizing that, you know, our ancient history is far different than what they've been telling us for so many years, you know, it flies in the face of a lot of the things that we have been taught for hundreds, if not thousands of years, of how the world came into being. Now, you could look at, you know, ancient myths and legend and lore and say, okay, you know, it's kind of closer to what's, you know, maybe some of the Native Americans were telling us, or the ancient Sumerians, that sort of thing. But when you get into some of the more modern churches and what they've been teaching, some of this flies in the face of that. And those are some very powerful organizations that don't want the truth to come out. So they're going to hide and suppress it. I also believe that we talked a little bit about ancient technology, about, you know, building some of these massive structures, and there are ideas about, you know, was there a sound technology that was used in that? Was there anti-gravity technology that was used in that? And if it was something like anti-gravity, which would be extremely, extremely valuable to our world governments, that's something that they probably don't want to divulge. That, you know, if that is truly something that they had developed way back in the day, you know, I kind of believe that that's one of the things that they're searching for in Antarctica, because that's a continent completely covered in ice. Who knows what secrets lie under that ice? You know, why were the Nazis down there? What were they looking for? And that could be what they're searching for, and they don't want the public to know about that.
Very strange. We learn every day. We can find new species that we thought were extinct. We can now rediscover and accept into mainstream science and say, oh, look, we were wrong. This just gives us an exciting new aspect of science to delve into. Let's go deeper into the ocean. Let's find out why the coelacanth is still alive after a million years of thinking that it was gone, right? That's an exciting aspect. So you would think, hey, we've now discovered a new generation of life and humanity. Let's go. And church does not, I mean, I understand the church in general is still a powerful entity, but it's nowhere near what it once was. Do you think that as that continues to lose its footing, that we will find more information? Because once the church is not the end all be all to how half of the world believes in our beginnings, we'll be able to re-examine some of those cases?
Yeah, and I think you're starting to see some of that. You know, you think about, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago, you and I probably couldn't have this conversation like this in a public forum. You'd have, you know, a number of organizations coming down on us. We'd be turned off the air. You know, because the church was a bigger power. Now they're still the oldest bank in the world, so they still have a boatload of money. But as far as their influence in our belief structure, that is certainly, and that probably, you know, as we talk about, you know, shifting from one age to another, like this whole, you know, if you want to get into, like, I hate using this term, but I'm going to use it. If you want to get into the kind of woo aspect of it, the metaphysics aspect of it, you know, shifting from the age of Pisces into the age of Aquarius, I think that's part of that shift where that structure of the church is going to lose its power and we're going to come into a new age. And we're kind of going through some of those growing pains now. So will we start learning some more of this information? I believe so. And I think it's why we're able to talk about it now, why we're able to get some of the information that we have now to be able to discuss these topics. And it's almost like we're right on the cusp and the old stalwarts are still holding back on us. But I think as we start getting some more of that new blood integrated into these different organizations, that, you know, maybe we'll start learning more. Maybe, you know, we'll have some whistleblowers out there that can kind of point us in the right direction of this research.
Yeah, there just seems to be so many people that are able to hack, you know, with all the things that have happened and information that's been released and whistleblowers that have come forward, it's surprising to me that nobody's been able to really compellingly prove a lot of these things, you know, that, that have been in contact with these giant bones or the excavation of some of these mysteries and things. Doesn't it seem strange to you? I mean, nobody can really keep a secret. And you would think with how easy it is to transfer data and information at this point, we would see a lot more of that.
Yeah, you would like to, for sure. And there's still a power structure in play in the world where you have a lot of private collectors with big money. You know, I've talked with you know, several people who, you know, they were on a, you know, a video call with somebody, you know, about some of this information. They're being very hesitant of what they will actually divulge. In the background, they can see the artifacts that have, wow, basically been, you know, essentially stolen from these sites. Now, when I was in Egypt, and I saw this really firsthand, when I was in Egypt this past summer, we were at Dendera, and they had just opened up a new crypt that we were told we were the first group down there since they had opened this up. And everybody, you know, talks about the light bulb freezes that are down there in the one crypt. But this other new crypt, they had just opened up, first time they'd let anybody in there in 20 years. And, you know, they call it a crypt, but there are no bodies or anything like that down there. It's just basically a chamber under the temple that has all this different artwork and these different friezes and things like that down there. And so we're down there, you know, we're checking out the different inscriptions and all that. And you're looking at, like, where is half of it? And, you know, you're looking, okay, here's, you know, some different hieroglyphs and all that. And then all of a sudden there's a big chunk that's gone. And you can see fresh chisel marks in the wall where it's been removed. And, you know, the big question becomes, okay, where did it go? If this wasn't some natural decay, you know, it's not in shards on the floor, you can see fresh chisel marks. And that's where you find out that, yeah, well, for the past 20 years, there's been a bidding war on some of these, on some of these different pieces, and they chiseled them out, and they're in the hand of private collectors now.
God. But there has to be a photograph of it in its entirety somewhere, right? Some of these mysteries, these little elements that have been removed, have to still exist aside from in private collectors' hands. And boy, what would those stories tell us?
Every once in a while you see like something like that pop up. And yeah, I really appreciate those guys who do dive into those old photo archives. And, you know, we'll do a side-by-side comparison. You know, hey, here's, you know, some temple from, you know, a photo of it from, you know, 1905 or whenever it was. And here's modern day. Look at the differences between the two. And, you know, those guys that are able to do that with those amazing eyes to find those differences, that's fantastic. That's when you get those little clues of, okay, something's going on. Something's changed here. Even like the Dream Stella. You know, they're in front of the Great Sphinx, you know, the bottom part of that where they tried to state that, well, you know, the Sphinx is only, you know, so many years old because of, you know, the king's inscription was down there, and the inscription's gone. It's worn off over the last 100 years since they dug the thing up. And you're going off of, you know, some chicken scratch of an old sketch that, you know, even in that sketch, you know, most of the hieroglyphs are fine. But once you get down to that bottom, it's like, well, that could be the king's name. It could be Khafre, but, you know, it's really up for debate. But they've stuck by that old standby.
Yeah. Fascinating stuff. We've got a lot more to cover. We are going to get deeper into the Lascaux's Mysterious Triangle and some of the other strange disappearances and phenomena. We'll do that when we return. Remember, you can get a copy of the book. We have a link for it on today's program guide, or you can just head over to darknessradio.com, click on the shop tab, and you'll be able to find our Amazon store there. And when you buy these books, make sure to rate and review them. Helps our authors get a higher profile on Amazon with it as well. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We've got more with Mike Ricksecker right after this.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once, a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Thanks a lot for tuning into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave. That guy over there, that's Tim. And sitting across from us, from his undisclosed location, Mike Ricksecker. He's the author of a new book called Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. It just came out. You can get a copy of it now. I know people always ask me, aside from the Amazon shop, is there any place they can get an autographed copy, or do they have to come see you in person at one of the upcoming events you'll be at?
Well, it'd be great if they came up and saw me at an upcoming event. But yeah, you can go to MikeRicksecker.com and you can order it there and get it straight from me, and I'll send you an autographed copy.
Excellent. All right. Good way to connect with the author as well. All right. Let's start diving deeper into the Alaska's Mysterious Triangle and some of the more compelling and bizarre cases that you uncovered for this book.
Yeah. You know, it's a... when you get into the Alaska Triangle and that region, there are so many stories you can really dive into, from, you know, whether it's UFOs or missing airplanes, ghost ships. You know, there's the Clara, Nevada story, which it really is almost like a murder mystery story that includes gold. And we were talking earlier about the Klondike Gold Rush, and when that occurred, they were retrofitting all these old vessels to ferry people up into the area to you know, because they wanted to, of course, mine the gold and all that. So they had to go through Alaska. That was really the main port. And this one particular ship, the Clara Nevada, as it was returning to Seattle, it hadn't gotten very far at all from its port there in Seward City, which is now called Comet. And all of a sudden, people reported seeing this large orange ball of fire on the water. And then the thing was gone. The remnants of the ship are around Eldred Rock Lighthouse, which has its own ghost stories as well. But as stories started coming out about what in the world happened with the Clara Nevada, why did the thing suddenly seemingly explode? And they only ever found one body from the ship. They believed everybody else perished. But it was supposed to be carrying a large cargo hole full of gold, which is supposed to be at the bottom of the ocean, but nobody's ever found anything as far as that gold. You start having these stories about, well, there are robbers on board that set the ship on fire and made off with the gold. The captain, which supposedly had gone down with the ship, they ended up discovering, Steve Levi, a historian, has a great book on all of this, was specifically on the Clara Nevada, but he had uncovered that, well, the captain that had supposedly gone down with the ship, he actually ended up captaining other ships, other people that he was able to track down that had been aboard the Clara Nevada. He ended up discovering elsewhere across the country years later. So what in the world really happened with this ship? Now, this is in the same channel. It's a very treacherous part of Alaska, which has been a number of shipwrecks. Couple of guys, I mentioned the Eldred Rock Lighthouse. A couple of the keepers had one day just gone out for a routine check of another lighthouse in the area. Never returned, never came back. They have no idea what happened. And they found their boat washed up on the shore a couple days later. Never found any bodies, never found them. They were just, again, a couple more guys who completely disappeared. Then you have the SS Princess Sophia, which was a cruise liner. That was a few years later. And this one, they call it the Alaska Titanic, because it got rung up on not an iceberg, but a reef, and the entire, all the passengers in the entire crew perished that night. The only survivor was an Irish setter dog. And what was really bizarre about this is the captain of that ship had traversed this channel countless number of times, had made this run for years, was doing the last run of the season. So how he got so far off course to hit this reef, nobody knows. Of course, people that believe in the power of the Alaska Triangle, you know, try to say that, well, the electromagnetic activity up there wreaked havoc on the compasses up there, which that is something that people do report up there, that compasses in electronic equipment suddenly start going crazy. So you have all of these interesting stories up there.
Yeah, see, that's what I find curious, right? Even like with the Flight 19 from Bermuda, you know, they believe that something geomagnetic might have interfered with their equipment, sending them way off course. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that even in that famous case, it wasn't just one fleet of planes that went missing. A search plane that went out, you know, search crew that went out after them went missing as well. So there are these natural, like high natural issues that take place. But in these flashpoints of high geomagnetic energies, is something else happening? Are portals opening? Are they vanishing through these portals? Now they're finding more and more remains at the bottom of the ocean. But you know, in the 70 years or so since World War II, they still have not, I don't believe to this point, still have not found the planes from Flight 19 or subsequent search pattern. So, you know, it's really interesting to me that, what do you make of the fact? I know portals is kind of the new trigger hot topic word in the paranormal field. But do you believe that there are rifts that we could surf, that we may be moving between times or dimensions, and maybe these people will be found in the future or perhaps even in our past somewhere?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you're going down this route. I mean, it's something that we briefly talked about on the Alaska Triangle television show when discussing the missing Douglas Skymaster from 1950. One of the ideas is that it traveled into a portal. I get deeper into that idea in my book, Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. And basically with that particular flight, it was flying out of Anchorage. And as it was traveling over the area of Snag, just over the border from Alaska into Canada, Snag in Yukon Territory, it just suddenly disappeared. Now, there was no bad weather. It was partly cloudy day, but you know, nothing terrible. Their last contact with the plane, everything had been fine, and then all of a sudden, poof, gone. Where did the thing go? Some interesting things that happened around that time. There were some significant UFO reports just before, within the days preceding that disappearance, before the Skymaster went missing, and actually afterward as well. And even this was January 1950, late January. In early February, there was another smaller plane that had gone down in that same area. They were able to find it immediately. Most of the crew was fine. And so it just kind of boggles the mind. Okay, how were they able to find this smaller plane that went down in the same area, but yet they couldn't find this massive Douglas Skymaster? And they sent out thousands and thousands of people to go, try to find this thing. The military, the U.S. military and the Canadian military had scheduled some exercises at that time. And instead of doing their military exercises, their war games, they went out on search and rescue. So you had all these guys just combing the landscape for this plane, never found the thing. There was some radio chatter, some garbled radio chatter that came across. They could never really discern if it was the Douglas Skymaster or not, like the crew from there. A lot of people believe that it was, and they only caught that twice. So one of the theories is that due to the vortex energy of the Alaska Triangle, that the Douglas Skymaster did disappear into a portal. And the reason why you were able to hear the radio chatter, even though the plane disappeared, is that sound works on a different wavelength, a different frequency. And so it was able to traverse back through the portal, at least temporarily. So one of the questions I've posed in the book is, okay, so if this plane goes missing into a portal, kind of like you were asking, Dave, where did it go? What happened? Did it end up in another point in time? Will we see it years from now down the road? Will it suddenly just reemerge in our skies? Or if you think the other way, if it went back in time, say 500 years ago, what would it look like to the indigenous peoples of the area at the time? They're not going to know from planes at all. If they see something like that, Douglas Skymaster flying through the plane or through the air, they're not going to say it's a plane. They're going to think it's maybe something like a very large bird sputtering smoke and being extremely loud, kind of like the Thunderbird legends that you hear about from that area around that time. So did the Douglas Skymaster go back in time and become one of these Thunderbird sightings?
Yeah, see, that's amazing to me. And if these portals, these rifts, these time slips are happening, could that explain how in some places they're finding technology that doesn't belong in that era? When they find gears and mechanisms that don't match up, but do they match up with people that went missing, with things and stories that might have? I don't know. It's a fascinating concept to me. And I don't think it's one we should summarily dismiss, because obviously there's a lot of places on this earth that things could go horribly wrong and you may never be found. But then, it always seems with the mapping technology and GPS and, the eye in the sky, now we're able to locate and find a lot of things, but there are still no explanations for many of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have the technology these days where it should be very hard to get lost, but people still do. And so where do they go? And I do have a nice little section in the book on time slips and time travel. And I think that's what happens in a lot of these cases, you know, on some of our paranormal investigations that we conduct. Yeah, I think that some of these, you know, apparitions or, you know, even some shadows that we see may actually be time slips. And we're seeing another point in time, maybe, you know, from the 1800s, and we might even be getting a glimpse of the future and aren't really, you know, ghosts or spirits at all, that we're just getting a glimpse of another point in time concurrent with ours.
And the fact that UFOs were seen before and after, you know, Tim and I have talked about on the show that it's interesting that in a lot of things, historic moments, UFOs seem to be there almost like witness to what's happening before and after historic events. Is, you know, are those UFOs us from the future, you know, coming back to figure out what really happened in history? Are they there to kind of map these moments, or are they the reason for some of these disappearances?
It really is. There's a lot of different possibilities here. The couple you mentioned, or, you know, some people surmise that in areas of the world like this, that they're very attractive to the UFOs because they know how to harness the energy and the power of these areas. So was this a moment in time in which, you know, that vortex energy of the triangle was welling up, was having a peak moment that maybe attracted these different UFOs into the area to essentially power up, you know, gas up. And then you have this other bizarre activity that's happening because of that energy that's welling up. So there's a lot of different theories as to why they'd be sighted around the same time. But you know, there's definitely a relationship there as to why when these things happen, we get a lot of these UFO sightings too.
Very, very strange. All right. So now UFOs obviously have been sighted around some of these mysterious disappearances. And again, that makes you wonder, are the disappearances an accidental artifact if these are not intergalactic travelers, but interdimensional, as many believe? Are they accidentally causing energy openings that these craft are going through, that people are walking through? And, you know, kind of that rupture in space time when they make their presence here and it hasn't closed up behind them is something else going through it. It's just, that's a weird element. But what other really high strangeness is taking place in the Alaska's mysterious triangle? Is it mainly just unusual disappearances, or are there other bizarre phenomena that would be noted there?
Well, you have some of the interesting government conspiracies, like with HARP. You know, is there a reason why the HARP antenna is out there? You know, are they harnessing the energy of the triangle? And with HARP, you have a lot of different theories as to, you know, what they could be doing with that. So some believe that they were able to change the weather with HARP, and they deny it, but they've actually created an artificial aurora with the thing. So there's something legitimate to that idea. There's also the idea of mind control with HARP, that those, you know, low level electromagnetic fields that they're able to create with it, they're able to change the patterns within the brain with it. So you have these strange government organizations up there, you know, things that are hidden. You know, you have the when they were researching the Black Pyramid in the region where that's supposed to be, you know, they were finding old runways and abandoned roadways in that area. So, you know, what were they doing? So there's certainly a lot of mystery up there in the triangle.
When you're investigating these different locations, is there something different about these type of encounters and disappearances that stand out to you more than other locations you've looked at?
Yeah, you know, there's a heightened degree of mystery with this because of how bizarre some of these different situations are. Like you had in the 1970s, Hale Boggs, who was the House Majority Leader at the time, and he, along with Congressman Nick Begich, just again another one that just suddenly go missing. You know, they're flying through the Portage Pass, gone. We don't know what happened to them, and that was one very high profile case where we lost a very high level government official. And, they're out there combing the area looking for this plane, completely gone. To this day, they've never found anything in regards to that plane. So it seems like the type of disappearances that happen, the type of mysteries that occur in this area are just on a whole nother level than what you see in other areas of the country or even of the world.
You would think now with all of the LIDAR and different technology that exists, this would be, a great time for us to be able to start scanning these areas more in depth and looking to see, can we find wreckage? Can we find things that might have been covered by snow and ice now? Is it just financially not conducive enough? Is there just not enough? People just go missing. It just happens. It's Alaska.
Well, I know with the Boggs Begich disappearance, because of how high profile it was, it did sink a lot of money into that. They even had spy planes flying overhead to try to find the thing, to no avail. Now, there's an interesting set of documents that came out some years back now, in which there was an interview with an individual in that area, came forward with information. He actually had information about all kinds of organized crime. And one of the pieces of information that he had was on the Boggs Begich disappearance. And what he stated was that he had loaded a suitcase onto that plane, didn't know what was on it at the time when he loaded it there, but he was, he was hired to put that on the plane and was told later that it had an explosive device on it. Now, the officials at the time when they put this report together, they determined that he was too sketchy of a character, that he wasn't reliable of enough of a witness. And so they disregarded that. And in also stating, because, people upon hearing about this wanted the search to be restarted. And one of the things that they had stated about restarting the search was that there are other planes that had gone down since that time. We're talking over 40 years now, but other planes had gone down in the area at that time, and they still never found any clue as to what happened to the Boggs Begich plane. So, there's something amiss there. There's something that just doesn't set right.
You know, it would be really fascinating to consider going to one of these locations using the same type of radar, or not radar, but radio that they would have used to communicate, and sending messages, especially at high peaks of flare activity and things like the Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights. Is there a way to maybe send messages through time to try to communicate and hear what happened to some of these planes and vessels that disappeared?
Yeah, that would be a fascinating study to make that attempt to be able to right. send messages back through time and to be able to try to communicate with them.
Certainly. That's kind of the whole concept of one of my favorite movies, Frequency, with Dennis Quaid, right?
Right.
Amazing. But I think there was a couple of Twilight Zone episodes and Outer Limits that kind of dealt with that concept as well, that theoretically those radio signals continue to travel and exist. And if you find the right bend in the spectrum of audio and space and time, could you reflect back, which I think sometimes is what EVP is. Sometimes it's why the ghosts sound as startled as we are, that there's something in their house, right? Or there's something there. Is they're getting the, you know, the audio waves are traveling in a different way and are small enough that they might be able to get through the quote unquote veil. Whereas, you know, just looking around and walking around in that area may not be as conducive to that.
Yeah, if those waves are still traveling because they have not yet hit a receiver, you know, it makes sense that we'd be able to capture that somehow. Yeah, through the veil, so to speak. And yeah, I've heard that theory before with EVP. You know, is that, you know, a wave that we were able to catch that was still lingering from long ago? It's fascinating to think about. And I briefly touch on it in this book. When we start talking about like the way time works, you know, I believe that time is all working concurrently. I have a theory that I call stack time theory, that everything that happened is happening and will happen. We're all happening concurrently at the same time. And when we see some of this phenomenon that, you know, seemingly like it looks like an apparition to us, and it's not really that it's something more like, our place in space time, our dimension, our reality is resonating just for a moment at the same frequency as one of those other moments in times. And so we're able to get a glimpse of that moment, whether it's, you know, whether we're seeing a person from long ago or even in the future, or we're hearing something, you know, like a voice from one of those time periods, that maybe it's just, you know, we're actually happening at the same time, and we're just, you know, resonate at the same frequency for just a moment to get a glimpse of it.
Right. And that's kind of the phenomena I've always believed in, right? I liken time to a book, the back cover being the beginning of all, the top cover being the end of all, which sounds kind of reverse, but looking at it stacked, like you just mentioned, and that all of these things are taking place. And some of the hauntings that we deal with may not be our past. Maybe we're hearing the future homeowners knocking around in that house, and we're the ghost to them, right?
Kind of, yeah, absolutely.
The others feel.
Yeah, like the others.
Yeah, there's that aspect of it that, you know, if time is, we still have free will. We still have the ability to choose, but it's all happening simultaneously. And maybe in those brief moments, we are making that connection through time.
Yeah, and I believe we are. And you hear some fascinating stories, you know, like my good friend Andrea Perrin, you know, she tells a fascinating story with her and her mother in, you know, what's known as the Conjuring House, in which they saw a time slip like that, where from the parlor, they saw a family suddenly emerge into the dining room, and the two gentlemen sitting at the table turned and looked at Carolyn and Andrea as if they were the ghosts. The one turned to the other and said, you know, will you look at that? You know, so it's fascinating when you hear these type of stories. But I do believe that, you know, many of these things that we're witnessing are just that. They're these interesting slippages of time in which we're seeing another moment, either from our past or from our future.
You know, it's interesting as you're talking about the strange things that are constantly uncovered. I am sent a message saying that the headline is, let me just tell you this. It's Ancient Walled City Emerges from Antarctica's Ice.
Oh, fascinating. I'm going to have to grab that one, because that goes, because I do actually at the end of the book start, I get into the connections between Alaska and Antarctica. And even though Antarctica is not a focus of the book, I think there's a lot of, you know, we talked earlier about lost civilizations, and that would be a place where there would certainly be lost civilizations. And, you know, was that the lost city of Atlantis, perhaps, you know, or at least connections to it? That's fascinating. I'm going to have to find that article.
Yeah, it says Antarctica's ice covering is melting quickly. That is bad for coastal areas around the world, but good for discovering the remains of the continent's pre-ice civilization. This post includes satellite images of a fortress-like city that is emerging from the melting ice. Fascinating stuff. Yeah, it really, there. Every mystery we think we're uncovering just opens up doors to more strangeness, right? And as the world continues to shift, the polar Ice caps are melting. Things are changing. I think we're in for, maybe we've been looking for the wrong paradigm shift. Everybody's expecting aliens and new world order. Maybe old world order is what we're going to find. Maybe that shift that's coming is the awakening of our past and realizing that we truly are more ancient, and that there's so much more to who we are and our journey than we've ever discovered before.
Yeah, I think you might be right, Dave. There are a lot of secrets hidden under the ice there in Antarctica, you know, under the dirt and sands of so many countries out there, and of course under the waters of our oceans, because the water level right now is higher than it once was, and like during the ice ages where the water table was lower and they were able to build out further, those civilizations have become lost and submerged. There's so many secrets out there, and again, we asked the question earlier, how did they build some of these structures? There was a knowledge, there was technology out there that they had. And so will we discover that? Will those discoveries take us, our modern civilization, to another level?
It's going to end up being like the end of Planet of the Apes for us, right? We're going to finally see this melt and realize, you maniacs, you blew it up, right? And we're going to realize, we've been here before, and we're doing the same shit all over again.
We're doing it all over again, yeah. Humanity has yet to learn from its own history.
Yeah, that is the truth. Before we say goodbye, give us one more of the strange tales from Alaska's mysterious triangles, whether it's ghosts and hauntings, UFOs, shadow beings, time travelers, lost ships or planes. What have you got for us to kind of go out on a weird note?
Yeah, a weird note. So there was a group of guys that had been, they were out in the wilderness. A bunch of them were riding snowmobiles. Others were out there hunting. And all of a sudden, this boy just emerged out of nowhere. Just all of a sudden, there he was. There were no tracks around him. No footprints, nothing. He was just there in the wide open, and they had no idea where this boy came from. And when they started talking to him, he said that he was taken, basically abducted, by these little people, and they had taken him someplace else into these caves that were within the mountain. And he had been there for quite a while. He wasn't sure exactly how long. And while he was there, he had met another little girl who said that she had been there for 40 years, but she was still a little girl. She had not aged. And then all of a sudden they let him go. And when he was let go, he appeared out in this field in the middle of the snow. So it's an interesting tale because you have so many things within this. These little people, were they dwarves, gnomes, leprechauns, fairies? Were they related to that folk? Apparently they had some sort of interdimensional power that wherever they had taken this boy and apparently this other little girl, time didn't exist because nobody aged there. And then all of a sudden when he emerged back into our plane of existence, again, there's no tracks around him. How did he just appear there? So very, very interesting tale.
That is awesome. There's a lot more to the book, folks. Make sure you tune in, check it out for yourself, Alaska's Mysterious Triangle. And again, we have links to Mike Ricksecker's websites and his program, so you can keep up with Mike and all the great work he does. And I know he has some upcoming trips as well you can find on his website. Mike, it's always a pleasure catching up to you, man. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me again, Dave. Always a pleasure talking with you.
All right, folks. Hey, just so you know, if you try to contact me through social media or email, I am gone until October 26th. So if it seems like I'm ignoring you and I no longer love you, I no longer care for you or worry about you, you might be right, but probably not the case. I'm really just gone and unable to reciprocate the messages. So just contact Tim. And maybe the easiest way is give him a call at 612-4-
No.
Oh, yeah, I guess it could be a lot of calls. Maybe if you just want to stop by his house at 314.
No, you don't
want him just dropping by to, connect with you? I mean, that way they can help quell your loneliness while I'm out of town too, Tim.
That's okay. I can find stuff to do. Yeah. I got plenty to do. Yeah.
Just email Tim at darknessradio.com. That's Tim at darknessradio.com. If you have your love or complaints about the show while I'm gone and know it, it'll fall on deaf ears because I'm not here, you can just contact Tim at darknessradio.com. We will be back next week with more of the best in paranormal and true crime talk radio. For that guy, I'm this guy. You've been listening to That Show. This is Darkness Radio.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago, yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.